You're listening to a podcast from Blogging Heads TV.
Hi, Ugo.
Hello, Bob. How are you?
I'm excellent. Let me introduce us. I'm Robert Wright. This is The Wright Show. You are Ugo Godinho, and you're in Brazil. And we're going to talk about the political situation in Brazil because you have a new president just elected last week. Named Bolsonaro, Jair Bolsonaro. A lot of people are saying he's just like Donald Trump. Some people are saying, no, he's worse than Donald Trump. And then, of course, a lot of people in Brazil are saying good things about him. Otherwise, he wouldn't be the president-elect. So I want to talk about him and about the comparison to Trump and whether he wound up in power for similar reasons to the reasons that Trump wound up in power. First, let me say a little more about you. We had our first conversation about 5 years ago when there were street demonstrations. This was when the Occupy movement was happening in the United States. You were a leftist demonstrator. You're a graduate student at that point. Now, are you out of graduate school now? And if so, what are you doing?
Yes. Right now, I'm working in a cultural organization. I'm a cultural producer right now in São Paulo.
Now, one thing that's interesting about you being a leftist is that, and I think this is in some ways a contrast between Bolsonaro and Trump. You know, I watched this video that Glenn Greenwald did for The Intercept talking about comparisons between the two. And one thing he said was that, you know, for Trump, the main enemies are like immigrants, terrorists, you know, whereas for Bolsonaro, the main enemy is the left. Is that right?
Is the left, yeah.
So
yeah, that's right, that's right.
You are public enemy number one.
Unfortunately, for the past 5 years, the media has made a very, very strong campaign to input the mistakes that happened during the government, during Lula, the Lula era.
He was a leftist who was running the government. He's now in jail. Yeah.
Yes, he was president for 8 years, and then we had 6 years of his successor, which was President Dilma Rousseff. And there were problems, there were errors, and there were corruption scandals that happened during that government. But the problem is the media managed to paste the corruption to the left as a whole. So the left is now seen by a large part of the population as the enemy to be eliminated from the country, from the political life of the country. The problem is a lot of people don't realize that their lives have actually, everybody's life. It's so hard to find someone in Brazil whose life hasn't improved over the past 10, 15 years because the country is really...
So during the governance of the left, you're saying things have gotten better economically for almost everyone, and yet there is enough, I guess, either discontent with the left or discontent with the status quo or with something to have gotten Bolsonaro elected.
Exactly. There's no comparison to what Brazil is today from what Brazil was 15 years ago, for example. Even though over the last 4 years now, there's been another increase in unemployment and etc. Still, you cannot compare Brazil today from Brazil that was before. So it's really a media campaign. If you look at Bolsonaro's presidential campaign this year, in Brazil, it's forbidden. I don't know how that works in the United States, but in Brazil, it's forbidden for companies to donate to politicians, right? So basically, campaigns are publicly funded. So Bolsonaro declared 1.7 million reais, that's around $500,000-$600,000 in campaign money. But actually, he had at least five companies illegally paying for marketing companies to do mass distribution of WhatsApp messages containing fake news against the leftist candidate. Who was replacing Lula because Lula couldn't run because he was in jail. Mm-hmm. So these things are being investigated, but now that the guy is already elected, nobody really thinks that the institutions which have already failed to uphold the law in the Dilma Rousseff impeachment case, in Lula's case, and etc. We don't really have much hopes that they're going to actually be able to stop Bolsonaro from really becoming president the 1st of January next year.
Yeah. And so what is it? What is the source of his appeal? What is it that people like about him?
Well, basically, he became the voice against corruption that the people were so desperate for. So the problem is, there's a lot of different profiles of people who believe and who vote for Bolsonaro. Some of them are the very conservative people in Brazil. People are not so vocally conservative in Brazil. Brazil is known as a very liberal country, but there's a lot that was hidden. And I think we can relate to the U.S. in that and how people started voicing their even racist thoughts and things like that. So Bolsonaro embodies that. He embodies homophobia, he embodies sexism, he embodies racism, he's vocal about it, and a lot of people have no problem.
In Brazil, does that mean anti-black or what?
Anti-black, uh-huh. Yes.
And is he, I don't know how much attention you pay to American politics, is it your sense that he's more open about these things than Donald Trump is, or, because Trump isn't openly anti-black. He is, when it comes to immigrants, he's a little more explicit, but how explicit is Bolsonaro?
Well, he said in a recent interview, when he was asked by his interviewer what would he do if his son was dating a black woman. And let's not talk about perversions. I educate my son quite well. So that was a recent interview. So you can have an idea.
Yeah. No, Trump. That. Trump would not. I think Trump would have enough wisdom not to say that, regardless of what he was thinking.
Yeah. The problem is, the comparison is, the United States has a more stable and old democracy than Brazil. In Brazil, people are not taking seriously the fact that you cannot have a president that says those things, because it naturalizes those things. And even if he's not going to be the one who's going to attack or do something specifically, or even if the laws in Congress stop him from making laws that actually harm people, he's gonna be validating people who actually do. And that's what's been happening during the 3 months of this campaign, this presidential campaign. There have been more than 80 registered attacks around the country of people attacking LGBT people, women and black people, and screaming, yes, Bolsonaro, yes, and stuff like this. And when Bolsonaro is elected, faggots are going to die, and things like this. From this to worse,
Bolsonaro say about this? He doesn't condemn it, or he does?
He surprisingly said, I can't do anything to control these people. He just said that. He doesn't think he has any responsibility towards it. And he hadn't been elected yet.
You mentioned that democracy is relatively young in Brazil. So there was a military government until the mid-1980s. And I guess Bolsonaro, he's from the military. Then he's been in politics since he left the military. But I gather he is kind of associated with that period. And has he been he has been explicit in saying he would like to return to a military government? Is that right?
Yes. Tagline for his campaign is, we're going to bring Brazil to how it was 50 years back. So 50 years back in time, we're in the middle of, in the first 4 years of the military dictatorship. He has been very open about it several times, that if things don't work democratically, he's going to be the first person to overthrow Congress, close Congress, and bring back the military. So he's not a military himself, but his vice president is. He has actually been expelled from the army, from the Brazilian army, back in the 80s or 70s, I think, because he argued with his superiors. He was deemed an uncontrollable person. He was expelled from the army at the time. Okay. But he has never cut ties with the military.
Okay. And I gather he's been also explicit about how certain groups of people should be killed. I mean, I know one thing Glenn Greenwald said is that in a way he's a better comparison with him than Trump is Duterte in the Philippines, who has not only talked about killing people, but has killed drug dealers in large numbers. Has Bolsonaro been explicit about killing people? And if so, what groups does he want to kill?
Well, he said that for Brazil to work from now on, his opposition would have to be arrested or exiled from the country. He hasn't been so specific about killing people, aside from saying metaphorical things like, "Oh, we're gonna shoot these guys," but not really seriously about it. However, he has also helped elect many governors of the 26 states of Brazil. So these governors, they are the ones responsible for security. Okay. So there have been several of the governors, some of them which are from the military, who have been announcing that they're going to start changing the rules so the police can actually shoot to kill without trial, without anything. Okay, we think you are a drug dealer or a bandit, or you are armed. We can shoot to kill, and we're not going to be questioned about it. So there is a danger that these things might start passing around. And also, they want to revoke the law for disarmament. So they want to get firearms in the hands of people, which is very, very dangerous.
Because that would be largely his followers, you mean?
Because that would be everyone, and it would raise the levels of violence really, really exponentially in Brazil.
So right now, Brazil has strong gun control laws, so it's hard for individual citizens to own a gun.
Exactly, and a lot of people have been thinking that they have been led to think that if they have a gun with themselves, they're more safe against someone at the streets, you know. Instead, it's the opposite. If somebody comes to rob you and they are armed, they see you are armed too, it may be that you get shot at instead of just robbed. So that's the thing. These guys are financed by the weapons industry in Brazil. The main Brazilian weapons manufacturer has had its shares increase like 50 times after his election. So they're expecting that.
Now, one thing you hear about Brazil is that there's a lot of income inequality there, right? I mean, I have this image of like rich people having these security guards to keep themselves safe because there's so much, I guess, discontent with the income inequality, right? And how did that, what is Bolsonaro's relationship to that? I mean, with Trump, there is this kind of irony, which is on the one hand, he is doing the bidding of rich people in terms of tax policy and so on. You know, he's giving big tax cuts to the rich and he gets a lot of support for them. On the other hand, he gets the support from people of significantly lower income who have a certain kind of resentment about their situation. But the resentment isn't against, I guess it's not against rich people per se. It's more against what they perceive to be kind of liberals who may have a lot of money, but that's not so much the issue. They kind of think of liberals as these people who don't have any respect for them and maybe are not very patriotic and maybe, you know, have as many friends in Europe as they do in the United States or whatever. What is Bolsonaro's appeal anything like that? Does he have a lot of lower class appeal?
He has a lot of lower class appeal, otherwise he wouldn't have been elected. But I think this appeal is more based, it's not so much as in the US, but it's more based on the fact that in Brazil, people really believe that there's going to be one person who's going to resolve everything, you know? And he found out, people found out that it could be this guy. Nothing has worked so well for the lower classes, except for what they saw in Lula as the guy who did well for them, you know? But if there's no Lula anymore, who's going to be the new Lula? And then they mistakenly think that this guy, who is the complete opposite of what, of actually what Lula, stands for, becomes the guy of choice for the lower classes. It's really, that's the main reason we get so appalled, with these results here. You know, it's.
Now, so speaking of Lula, I mean, as you said, he was this leftist who came into power, I guess, more than a decade ago, and then he ruled for a while. Then he had a successor. Then both of them were prosecuted for corruption, right? And I gather there are a number of people on the left who think they weren't really guilty of it, and that this was kind of, I don't know, you might say the deep state in a certain sense, the right-wing elements reasserting power and putting some dangerous leftists in jail. But leaving that aside, I gather there is consensus that yes, there is a lot of corruption in government and has been. And the only question is whether Lula and his successor were really part of that. Is that it?
There's a consensus that there's been corruption, but it's not directly related to the Workers' Party, to the left. Leftist party, but more to the system as a whole, especially because the right-wing parties, the ones who worked to overthrow Dilma Rousseff's government, they're a lot more implicated. Their parties are a lot more implicated in corruption. They have had many more deputies and congressmen that were removed from politics or arrested because of the same police operations. What happened during the Workers' Party government? What happened, what started with Lula is that he started taking, the fight against corruption seriously. He started empowering the FBI, Brazil's FBI, for example, to really start investigating corruption schemes. So what happened is it came back against his own government because there was corruption going on inside the government. He couldn't, of course he's no saint. He knew of things, but he had to work with what was going on and how, what he could do inside the government. So, honestly, the things for which he was accused and taken to jail are very, very ludicrous and have been very criticized. So, of course, he knew of things, but he wasn't personally involved. Neither was Dilma. Dilma was never accused, never convicted of anything. She was politically impeached. Yeah. For something that actually, her vice president who assumed presidency after she was impeached. At the same week that she was impeached, they changed the law so that he couldn't be impeached anymore for the same reasons. So it's just an accountable thing that she was accused of doing that thing. It's an accountability thing that was very common in all the presidencies, all the governments here in Brazil. What happened is, and there's audio recordings of corrupt politicians discussing it. They said, we have to take down Dilma's government because we have to stop this before we get all arrested, because before our schemes are done. And they actually succeeded. They had there's recordings of them talking, and they said,
and
we need
that, when you say them, you mean people in like the prosecutor's office or what?
At the time, these were discussions between senior members of parliament. So we had the president of the Chamber of Deputies, for example, who was recorded in this case that I'm talking to you about. So these guys were talking about these things and saying, we have to involve the Supreme Court, we have to involve the military, we have to do an agreement with everyone so we can stop these investigations. This has been explicitly recorded and hasn't been enough for people to realize it's not the fault of the Workers' Party. It's something deeper. And when you throw out the Workers' Party as the most corrupt party, which it's not, then you open the room and you open the Congress and you open the country for the really corrupt people to take back power for themselves and stop investigating the corruption scandals. And that's what's happening right now. Mm-hmm. After Lula gets arrested and the judge who put him in jail becomes the new Minister of Justice, what's going to happen right now?
Right. So Bolsonaro right just announced that, right? That the judge who put Lula in jail is going to run the Justice Department.
Exactly. And you have an interview of this judge. I don't know if I think it was a few months ago or in the beginning of this year. And he was explicitly saying to the journalist that he would never accept a political position because this would put doubts on his very serious work against corruption. Mm-hmm. And right after the election, he says he honorably accepts the invitation to become the next Minister of Justice. So it's very obvious what's happening, but there's a very massive campaign to discredit the left as a whole, mm-hmm. as the corrupt faction. And we have to take these guys out, even if we have to use guns for it.
So in the United States, you know, Trump was famous for saying about his political opponent, lock her up. And crowds chanting that after he first said that she would have been she would be in jail if you're president. And, but in this case, the opponents have already been locked up and Bolsonaro is making the person who locked at least one of them up, putting him in charge of the Justice Department. Now, one thing I don't understand is, Lula's party actually nominated him, even though he was in prison, serving a 12-year prison sentence, right? Now, how is that going to work? I mean, was the idea that if he won the election, he would have to be let out of prison so he could be president or what? I don't understand.
He was already convicted. He was already in jail. He was arrested. At the time, Lula was already nominated by the party, okay? So when the campaign officially started, Lula was already in prison, but the party decided to maintain him as the official candidate because there's still some recourses going to the Supreme Court for trying to absolve Lula from his condemnation. So it's still ongoing. We never thought that Lula was going to be in jail for so long. And we're thinking that maybe depending on the results of these elections, but most people were not expecting Bolsonaro to get elected. Most people were thinking that after Lula ceases to be a threat, he's going to be let out of jail because this is not going to sustain itself. But now with Bolsonaro elected and the guy who arrested Lula being the new Minister of Justice, we can expect Lula to start getting some of his colleagues and supporters in jail with him soon.
Now, it's funny, like, as I think we said, the polls suggested that Lula, if he had been allowed to run, would have beaten Bolsonaro in the election. And it kind of reminds me a little of how in the United States, Bernie Sanders, the leftist candidate for the Democratic nomination, polls showed that he would have done better against Trump than Hillary mm-hmm. Clinton did. He was kind of sidelined by the establishment in a very different sense. I mean, he was the Democratic Party establishment kind of worked a little to marginalize him. But in any event, he didn't get the nomination. But not only did polls show that he might have beaten Trump, but also there was a certain amount of evidence that a number of Trump supporters actually felt pretty warmly toward Sanders, which sounds ironic at first because Trump is on the right, Sanders is on the far left, much farther left than Hillary Clinton. But on the other hand, it says something about the nature of Trump's support that they, mm-hmm. that some of these people could have supported a populist on the left instead of Trump. I mean, Sanders is so different from Trump in so many ways, and yet he just conveyed a sense that he ultimately was first of all, he cared about something. He wasn't just a regular politician. He had actual convictions. And secondly, that he did have the interests of ordinary working Americans at heart. So how would you – I mean, is it the case that Lula – a lot of people who voted for Bolsonaro could well have voted for Lula? And if so, what is it that they see in common between Bolsonaro and Lula?
Mm-hmm. I think it's a little bit of what you already said. They're both populist leaders. They appeal to the people. There's a lot of people who would have voted for Lula, and as their second choice, they had Bolsonaro, even if they're so far apart, like you said, like Trump and Bernie Sanders. So they are populist leaders, and the problem is the misinformation of people. People cannot think, if I can't vote for Lula, let me try to see who is the next guy who kind of sounds like him or has the same government propositions as he does. And unfortunately, people are not trained to do that. Mm-hmm. They're misinformed. People have been informed in this election by WhatsApp Messenger. So 83% of people in Brazil in this year, this is an international case of how WhatsApp can influence elections. And it always goes back to Cambridge Analytica and Steve Bannon and Facebook leak of data. We had tens of millions of data from people leaked here in Brazil. These phone numbers ended up in the hands of these companies who were hired with millions and millions of illegal money to send WhatsApp messages misinforming people about the leftist candidate. So Haddad, who was the candidate that was replacing Lula after Lula was banned from running, he was accused of being a pedophile. He was accused of defending communism. He was accused of creating something which was a gay kit that was supposed to be delivered to kids in the kindergarten to influence them to become gay. So that's the level of things that people actually believed in during this election. So if you ask why Lula's votes didn't go to the candidate that Lula stood for, that Lula told people, hey, vote for this guy because he represents me.
Mm-hmm.
People actually prefer to believe that guy maybe he's a pedophile. So I'd best vote for Bolsonaro because, you know, with Bolsonaro, I'm going to be safe, even if people don't really know the meaning of that for their real lives.
You know, I don't know much about WhatsApp. I've never used it. By the way, it's owned by Facebook. But I know it's a messaging app. I've always thought of it as just another way to kind of like text somebody, but it sounds like it has more of the social dimension that Facebook has, where you can share things with multiple friends. And so things can spread through the system rapidly. Is that it?
The main difference to Facebook is on WhatsApp, if you forward something to someone, you don't know where it came from. You can't see where it came from. So basically, if you send a message to someone and then you take that one and you forward to someone else, you don't know where it came from.
Wait,
it's not traceable.
Wait, it just shows up in your feed and you don't know which of your friends sent it?
There's no feed. You have to get it from someone. You have to get it from someone.
You know who forwarded to you, but you don't have the original source?
Exactly. But you can also get a message from someone you don't know. Okay? So you can get a direct message from someone you never knew before. So if somebody has your number, they can send you a message. And that's what these companies paid millions and millions and tens of millions of US dollars for spreading fake news about the Workers' Party candidate.
So it's like when I get a text that's a spam, it's from somebody I don't know. These people did that on a large scale, and they convinced enough people that what they were sending was true that people shared it.
Exactly. On a huge scale, with more than 2 million accounts with phone numbers to send these. And these accounts are actually blocked by WhatsApp after the scandal appeared, after an investigation by one of Brazil's main newspapers. And this investigation happened, and WhatsApp actually acted upon it and blocked one of the accounts that were blocked was actually Bolsonaro's son. And Bolsonaro's son even tweeted about it. And he said, hey, my account was just blocked by WhatsApp. What's going on? It's these communists who are actually trying to stage a coup against us and stop our campaign. So they have a way of overturning everything that's actually true against them as something that's a conspiracy against them. It's pretty mind-boggling.
Trump is very good at that as well, believe me. Everything that goes wrong, he works to blame someone else for, and any form of kind of resistance he encounters, he's inclined to attribute to some sort of nefarious doings by his opponent. I mean, the caravan is a good example. You know, you may have heard of this caravan that's heading toward the United States from Honduras. And of course, if it's in anyone's interest politically in America to have started that caravan, it is in Trump's interest. I mean, if there was a conspiracy, I would think Trump is more likely to be behind it than anyone else. But I think he's convinced a lot of people that Democrats secretly started this thing that was going to damage them in the midterm elections. Anyway, that's a digression, but it sounds like a similar kind of playbook.
Yeah, and it's not by chance. Bolsonaro's son had several meetings with Steve Bannon in the United States prior to the campaign.
So it's
all linked. Yes, it's not casually a coincidence.
Yeah, Bannon says he's going to start an international league of, you know, kind of ethno-nationalist populists, and he's traveling to Europe and so on. And it sounds like he had some influence here. Now, as for the ethno-nationalist part, is that a fair description of Bolsonaro? I mean, he's appealing to Brazilian nationalism. And although, as we said, he doesn't focus perhaps as much on, like, immigrants and so on as Trump does, still the idea is that outside, I mean, does he play on xenophobia and fear of foreigners and stuff or what?
Immigration and refugees and stuff, it's not so big an issue in Brazil as it is in the United States or Europe. So it's not a big card to play. There's a little bit of xenophobia coming from the right-wing groups, especially against the Venezuelans who have been crossing the borders. But it's not such a big deal, you know. Bolsonaro plays to Brazilian nationalism, but it's more a very, very shallow nationalism that says, hey, I'm going to wear this flag because I'm against corruption, you know? And it doesn't go beyond that, actually. And in fact, Bolsonaro is very, very ready to, open the borders of Brazil and privatize the state companies and everything. His minister of finance is a very, very liberal guy who has been, who has actually done all his career in the United States. So what people are afraid of is how long is it going to take for Bolsonaro to really sell off for nothing all of Brazil's riches? He's actually, already stated that he's going to be merging the Ministry of the Environment and the Ministry of Agriculture. So basically what it says is we don't need the rainforest, we don't need the Amazon forest, let's give it to the plantations. Right. And
that's a concern. People who are concerned about climate change worry about that because the Amazon rainforest does a lot of recycling. Of carbon,
not just for Brazil, but for the world. Yeah. And especially even inside Brazil, the climate in the southeast of Brazil, it actually depends on the rainforest so that we don't become a very dry area here. We're on the same, part of many other deserts on the same latitude as other deserts on the world. So the southeast of Brazil, where São Paulo and Rio are located, would be a very dry area if there was no rainforest over here. So, it's quite dangerous what he's proposing.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you mentioned that he's talked about being willing to resort to military rule if that's necessary. And I gather he's in various ways talked as if he's not going to be very respectful of civil liberties. Are people using the term fascist to describe him in Brazil?
Yes. Even recently, he's been compared to Adolf Hitler because of this process of how he was elected, how he was put into power with the same kind of discourse as Hitler did. So, he's even been called a Nazi, and there's many of his supporters who actually have been, vocally supporting Nazism, and, it's just very hard to fathom that, but it's becoming a movement, you know, just because that's how we face the corruption and the left and these guys. There's actually, so when, at the same time, part of his supporters, when Bolsonaro is called a fascist or a Nazi, these people come to say, hey, but Hitler was the left. Nazism means national socialism, and so socialism is the left. So Hitler was the left, so we have to fight the left. So how can Bolsonaro be Hitler if Bolsonaro is the right? So that's what we're dealing with here.
Right. Now, what are you most fearful of happening when he takes office in January? What kinds of things do you worry about that might be the first kind of dangerous from your point of view things that he would do?
I think this the revoking the disarmament law is, I think it's going to be one of the most dangerous things that he might do, and he might do that quickly.
And so citizens would buy guns en masse, but he must think, if he wants to do that, he must think that it would be mainly his supporters that would buy the guns.
I'm not sure. I don't know. I don't think we can actually foresee how that's going to happen. But with what we think is, it's going to become much easier for actual criminals to get guns. We already have a lot of criminals with guns in Brazil. Even with control, without control, it's going to be easier, and it's going to become a police state even more than it already is. You know. And this kind of thing feeds their own government. It feeds the need for more security, more control. So they actually want crime rates to increase so that they can have more police and more control over people and control activities. And then we have been universities. Even he hasn't taken the seat yet, but we have had universities being invaded by the police, and police stopping classes and stopping reunions in universities already. So the Supreme Court is...
Do you mean reunions among people who are alumni or what?
Yes, reunions of people who are discussing, who are...
Oh, I see. Meetings at universities where they discuss politics.
Exactly, exactly.
So that's happened since the election, even though he hasn't taken office yet?
Exactly, because already some people and some institutions are feeling empowered to do these kinds of things. They think they're already going to be protected if they do this. So we have this newly elected deputy who is also a professor at a university, and she has said to the students all over Brazil that they should be filming their classes so as to denounce the professors who actually talk about politics and criticize Bolsonaro and the universities. So she has already been prosecuted for saying that and etc. There's a reaction to these things that are happening, but they are happening, and there's going to be this dispute of who has more power. You know, the rule of law, the institutions, or these newly empowered people who have very authoritarian ideas of what is a democratic country.
And does it depend partly on like which judge a case comes in front of? I mean, right now the judiciary is just divided between judges who would be sympathetic to Bolsonaro and those who wouldn't.
Exactly. We still have some faith in the Supreme Court of Brazil, but the Supreme Court has proven very, very unstable and influential also. So we don't really know where this balance of power is going to be taking us. And it's all going to depend on how well the economy goes. If the economy goes so bad and unemployment rises and everything, people are going to quickly become discontent with Bolsonaro because he's not going to deliver on his promise to improve the country. He has already declared that he doesn't have an answer to taking the country out of the crisis. So there's a lot of factors that are coming in that's going to define how the first months are going to be.
Okay. And do you worry that just what you're doing now, which is publicly saying critical things about him, will become a dangerous thing to do after he's like, do people worry that he will he will have journalists arrested and so on?
Yes, it's right now he hasn't done anything because he's not taking power yet. But we already have, it's becoming very common for people to have death threats coming to their inboxes. Journalists are being fired from newspapers if they're too vocal about it, because their bosses are worried that the newspaper might stop getting funds. Bolsonaro has already declared that he's not going to give official government funds to the media companies that criticize him. So he has spent his entire campaign criticizing the left, saying that the left had a plan to implement social control of the media. But he actually right now declared that he's going to do exactly that, but not without the social part of it. Well, he's going to do a direct control.
Does a lot of the media get government funding in Brazil?
There's a lot of funding from the media, but especially to the biggest media outlets, because usually during the Lula administration, they would do government spending on publicity and etc. depending on the newspaper's audience. So the bigger your audience, the more money you get. Mm-hmm. Bolsonaro has already declared he's not going to take that into consideration, and we actually don't know what he's going to consider, so where he puts his money. Mm-hmm. But he has already, for the first collective interview after he was elected, he already let the main newspapers out, and he only let in television and social media groups. So he is already giving signs that he's not going to be very democratic in how he lets information go around.
So two of the main, institutions that you worry about are the media and universities, right? That he could,
yeah.
That both of those could be constrained under his administration. What about specific groups of people? Is there a fear that he will persecute ethnic minorities, gay people?
Yeah, for instance, he has already declared that he wants to establish a Ministry of the Family. And they have already started, they have already put in Congress new laws, that are going to be the main, front laws for his new administration to prohibit, same-sex marriage, which is in Brazil, he has already been, validated by the Supreme Court. So it happens. It's been a few years now that same-sex marriage is happening. And he already has plans and law projects to forbid that, and to even change the constitution to state specifically that a family is only a family between a man and a woman. So there's a big risk that these some minorities are gonna be really, really jeopardized by his administration. And the problem is he already has a very the Congress has already been renewed in the same elections, and he has a big, big support in the Congress for passing these laws now.
So does he draw a lot of support from what in the United States is called the religious right? In other words, very religious people who are conservative, at least on social issues, like on issues of same-sex marriage, abortion, and so on. Does he have that very much? That's a big part of his constituency?
It's exactly the same in Brazil. It's exactly the same.
Except that they're Catholic probably instead of Protestant.
No, actually, the Catholics in Brazil, now they're, after this polarization, because the Protestants, the neo-Pentecostal churches, Protestant churches in Brazil, they have increased a lot. They have a lot of followers, and they are very, very, very conservative. I think it's just like in the U.S. Mm-hmm. because we have actually inherited the model from the United States here in Brazil, and it's become a very marketable religion, and it's attracted a lot of people. That's one of the main reasons Bolsonaro got elected, because people from the churches, the church leaders basically said, you have to vote for Bolsonaro or otherwise you go to hell. I'm simplifying, but it's more or less like that. So they really mix politics with religion. Just after his election, they stopped Congress and they started doing a collective prayer inside the Congress room. So it's that kind of thing we're dealing with here. Mm-hmm. And it's basically Protestant. After this, the Catholics, they became more like, okay, we have a common enemy, so let's defend democracy again, because otherwise we're going to be, you know, run over by the Protestants.
So the Catholics are, I mean, again, a lot of the Protestants are apparently Pentecostals. I mean, Pentecostals have done a lot of evangelizing in Latin America in general to a point where the Catholic Church, I think, feels kind of threatened and has responded to that. So it sounds like, on balance, Catholics are more liberal in Brazil than the Protestants.
Yes, we can say that now, especially after this movement. Yes.
Okay. And we touched on this a little maybe, but again, in the United States, a lot of Trump supporters are resentful of a particular class of Americans whom they think looks down on them. They feel as if they are held in contempt by these kinds of coastal liberals or whatever. Is there that same sense in Brazil among a lot of Bolsonaro supporters that a certain class of Brazilians does not respect them?
Not really, not really. I think there should be, actually, because Bolsonaro represents a class, the class that really, the part of the people that really hate the Workers' Party, not because of corruption. They hate the Workers' Party because they actually work to reduce the inequalities in Brazil, and they are also hated for that. So if the poor classes would actually realize that, they would realize that Bolsonaro is the candidate for these elites, you know, that these elites were not satisfied with how the country actually improved over the last year, and they kind of lost their privileges in relation to the rest of the people. You know, you can imagine this very classical scene where you have a family from the elite, and you have the son of the family that's going to apply for university, and now he has to dispute a place in the public university with the son of the maid that works for her in her home. So these people, they're actually very dissatisfied with this. But the problem is, the worker class does not realize that. So they should be. And the left has actually been very dull about it, because we keep sticking to that note that we defend the poor against the rich. But this discourse does not work anymore. The poor poor classes, they just think like the rich, or they think as if they were rich and should defend the same things that the rich people do. It doesn't work anymore in Brazil.
Meaning they want law and order, or what?
Exactly. They just don't realize this law and order is going to work against them the way it's going to be done.
That because the economy has improved over the last 15 years or so, enough people have actually been pulled out of poverty so that they have more middle class concerns about law and order. Is that part of what's going on?
Yes. Yes, you can say that.
And so how much awareness is there of the American analogy? I mean, in the United States, to the extent that there is awareness of the recent Brazilian election, it's all processed through this kind of paradigm of a comparison with Trump. How is Bolsonaro like Trump? How is he different? In Brazil, is there much awareness of the Trump phenomenon and the connection or analogies between Bolsonaro and Trump?
Yes. You're going to find a lot of Trump admirers among the Bolsonaro supporters here, especially among the rich classes. They really, really, really think that Trump is the guy who's doing the best for the United States. So there is that. The fact that Bolsonaro, after his election, you know, got a call from Trump, and he was later boasting about it. So these things show that they are actually aligned, and the discourses are aligned, and a lot of people see that this phenomenon, also on the left, people see that this phenomenon is very correlated. People were fearing that from the beginning, after Trump was elected in the United States, and the impeachment was already going on here in Brazil, around 2 years ago. People are already foreseeing that 2 years from now, Bolsonaro would run. And if Lula was not allowed to run, there was a huge chance that we would get our own little Trump elected here in Brazil as well. Only he's actually, I agree with the people who told you, no, Bolsonaro is actually worse because he's even more dangerous. I think he's even more dangerous than Trump because our institutions and our democracy cannot withstand the same as the United States institutions can.
So you think there's actually a significant chance that within 3 or 4 years, Brazil could be a military dictatorship again?
I think it's unfortunately possible. I think if things go really south, if the economy doesn't go well, if we have a lot of people demonstrating, I think the government can start applying violence and, pursuing journalists and everything, and these things are not going to pass so easily. So if tensions escalate, it's possible, because it's not a huge secret that the military in Brazil, a faction of the military in Brazil, have always worked as a maintainer, you know, of order, and so they. It's not too hard, and a lot of people are going to be okay with the fact that the military can intervene and all of a sudden we don't have elections for a year from now. Just like it happened back in 1964 in Brazil, when the military, you know, overthrew the government due to delusional accusations of communism. It's the same story. It's the same story from 54 years ago. And they took power and then they said, okay, in a year from now, we're going to run normal elections again. And it never happened.
Okay. And I guess maybe this is the final question, but is there a discussion on your side? I mean, on the anti-Bolsonaro side, and maybe particularly on the left part of the, well, and by the way, is the anti-Bolsonaro side almost entirely the left? Because in the United States, it's a little more complicated than that. Is it basically the left versus Bolsonaro?
Unfortunately, only at the very last time we had a larger part of our society finally, and too late, unfortunately, declaring, okay, we cannot accept Bolsonaro. Bolsonaro stands against anything. This guy is in favor of torture. If we're talking about someone who defends torture, there can be no talk. You know, there can be no seriousness, no government. So we cannot let this guy go. So yes, let's vote for the Workers' Party, even if we hate the Workers' Party. Mm-hmm. So there's a part of the society that started thinking like that, but it was too little too late, mm-hmm. You know, but there's a part of the people who do not identify with the left, who are completely against Bolsonaro because of what he stands for. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So final question, is there much discussion, kind of tactical discussion, on the anti-Bolsonaro side of the need to be careful in the way you confront him, precisely because, as you said, he will use disorder. He will use a certain kind of confrontation as an excuse to crack down and amass more authority. Is that a big discussion, like exactly how you're going to go about this?
Yes, there's groups of people already organizing, you know, to try to understand and help defend each other and help organize strategies and tactics. The first thing that happened after he was elected was for us to get, you know, we started getting manuals on personal defense, manuals on how to behave, and avoid getting attacked by random Bolsonaro supporters on the street and stuff like that. There's consultation going on in all levels of how we can, people are calling themselves the resistance already, even though it might seem a little bit early for that, but we we shouldn't consider it early, especially because we, year after year, since 2013, when the streets were overrun by the right-wing demonstrators against corruption, we have been letting things go and letting things pass, and we came to where we are now. We can't let anything like this pass anymore. So we have to find ways to resist. We just don't know exactly how, but we're trying to get lessons from the past.
Yeah, well, I mean, we've said that there's a connection between kind of American Trump supporters and Bolsonaro supporters, as mediated particularly by Steve Bannon. Maybe there should be a kind of connection between the resistance in the United States and the Brazilian resistance. Maybe we can learn from each other.
There should. That would be a great learning from, actually, yeah.
Okay, well, thank you so much, Ugo. As we tape this, it's actually a day and a half before the midterm elections in the United States. Some people will hear this before the midterms, some people after the midterms, and we'll know, I guess, a little more about the future of Trumpism after the midterms. But in any event, good luck with your own cause in Brazil. We'll be paying attention, and maybe down the road we can check in with you again.
Thank you. I'll be here to talk, and thank you for this opportunity to sharing a little bit of what's going on here, and hope to hear of you guys. Good luck for you on the midterm elections as well.
Okay, thanks, and good luck to you.
Before you go, a quick message from the suits at Blogging Heads TV. Blogging Heads will always be free for you to watch and listen to, and we don't even go the NPR route of guilting you into donating during Pledge Week. But we do have a small request. If you enjoy Blogging Heads programming, rate and review us on iTunes. The iTunes algorithm weighs positive reviews heavily, so taking a few minutes to rate and review us will help more people find out about our shows. Also, of course, we encourage you to subscribe to our Twitter and Facebook feeds. Thank you.